Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Idris Nichols is all about creativity. The hairstylist, known for her aesthetic and multicultural approach to her craft, was born on the island of St. Vincent. She grew up watching her grandmother work her magic as a hairstylist. Her mom came to New York when Idris was 5 years old. She worked as a maid, using that money to bring her four children here, one by one. Idris, number three, arrived when she was 15, and she's been here for 37 years. She got her start in the hair business not long after by enrolling in an after-school program in New York City. She eventually perfected her craft at several salons in New York and later worked as a freelance stylist in Paris and Milan. On March 3, 2003, a date Idris says has special significance, she'll explain that shortly, she opened her own salon. What makes Idris Salon unique is that the staff is trained in the specific needs of African-American, Asian, and mixed-race hair types. She caters to a very diverse clientele. Idris is also a beauty consultant for Shape magazine, a stylist for music videos, editorial shoots, and the fashion runway. Her salon has made Elle magazine's top 100 salons list numerous times. So, Idris, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So describe life on St. Vincent and tell me, how were you impacted by your mother's decision to come to the States?
Well, I think like every Caribbean family, you know, you're here because you want to make a better life for your child. In the Caribbean, for me, it's too small. You know, it's idyllic. It's beautiful. I would love my child to grow up there, but it's not a place that I think is ideal for someone who's creative.
Mm-hmm.
It's a much more conservative environment. Because West Indians are pretty conservative. And then we have these great creative people that come out of it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there are few of us that come out and we excel because we get the freedom to fly. America is huge. New York is huge.
No kidding.
When I came here, I was like, wow.
Oh, you had to be crazed when you came into a city, which is the antithesis.
It was fascinating. I came here because someone told my mother, the island is too small for your daughter. Because I was the kind of kid that I would take a pair of pants, I would sew it up, and I would wear it. If my grandmother was making a curtain, I would be like, okay, can I have a shirt from
that? So you couldn't help yourself.
I was just a creative, you know, kind of, they considered me crazy a little bit because no one understood the kind of personality I was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very hard to be this young, creative young woman in this small
with nowhere to go,
right,
in a sense.
Right. So my mother didn't have a choice but to send for me.
You knew that at some point you were going to join her.
It's complicated because I'm not quite sure my mother wanted her children here because she got married very young. And so she had a freedom finally. So she was here.
So she divorced your dad?
That's complicated.
Okay, that's fine.
That's considered, I'm a love child. Anyway.
Okay.
But the thing for me is that I think that she was so used to having her freedom and her four kids were back with her, my grandmother.
Right.
I was raised by my grandmother. My grandmother is my mother. My mother is my friend.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, because those moments that you need your mother, your grandmother is giving you that love and attention and that...
And discipline.
And disciplined, and I respect her so much.
Mm-hmm.
She passed at 99 years old.
Wow.
That was my mother. That was my spirit, you know, and she was an amazing one, creative. I learned to do hair because of her.
Mm.
You know, black women on Saturdays, we shampoo our hair, we sit down, it's like a congregation. It's a beautiful thing. What you do is that you shine your children, what we call it wash and shine. So you get shampooed, cleaned up for Sunday the next morning.
For church?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So the idea, congregation starts on Saturday. So the women would come to my grandmother's house and they would get their hair pressed.
So was that her avocation or her vocation?
I think it's more vocation.
So she got paid women's hair.
She wasn't considered a cosmetologist. It's just that in the Caribbean, we believe in hands. I'm from an island that still have a lot of African roots.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about the hands. And if someone feels that hand is spiritual or some kind, they say, okay, I'll go and I will have my hair done by this person. So my grandmother was a kind of like a sensei almost, a sage by most people, because she, people loved her and she was a creative woman.
So she was clearly more than just a stylist.
Yes, she was. You went because you want to speak to her, you want to be part of her, you want to be in her life.
And so you watched and absorbed all of this.
Well, I wasn't a child that loved children. I loved adults. I went everywhere with adults.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised by a lot of women, and that's mm-hmm. who I am today because of these women. And I was my grandmother did hair, so I spent all my time with her. If she was cooking, if she was cleaning, if she was painting, I would just hang out with her.
And what about you and your siblings?
We're close because I'm a third. I'm like a middle child, basically. And I'm so different that I wanted to be around my grandma. I felt that she was so interesting that I wanted to be wherever she was.
And there was a comfort zone for you doing that and for her as well?
Yes. I loved being with older women.
Interesting.
And I love being with older people, mm-hmm. which I think that to me, that's my spirit.
So that's now a natural act for you, or always has been a natural
always
act for you?
Always been a natural act.
So here you are, you're 5 years old, and your mom leaves to go to the States to make a better life. Mm-hmm. And so for 10 years, you're cultivating your life in your grandmother's house.
I'm cultivating a personality, a persona, because I'm a child that's born May 1st. In the Caribbean, May 1st is it's Labor Day around the world, right? And so that day, everything is closed.
So everybody stopped for you, huh?
Exactly. So to me, that was about me, you mm-hmm, know? So mm-hmm. they had the maypole dances.
Uh-huh.
You know, so to me, that was my day.
Uh-huh.
You know, I came to the United States and I'm like, wow, they don't do that here.
Yeah, really.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know.
There you are, Idris. I'm over here.
Pay attention to me. I was also a kid that was a leader, and I loved taking care of my friends. You know, and also knew that I was different in the fact that I was also gay.
Well, how'd you know that?
I was attracted to every teacher, every beautiful woman, every
even
teacher.
As a youngster.
Yes.
Isn't that interesting?
Attractive to women, and I realized that, wow. But I couldn't be that person yet because it's also, again, very conservative. So
sure.
What happens is
sure.
that you have to suppress that. And I knew a lot of the kids around me who were gay.
Isn't that interesting?
You know, and I would try to protect them, especially if they were younger. I would try to protect them because I knew that there was something different
about
them
you guys.
And about us.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of form an alliance. I still am friends with most of those young people.
Still,
we're not young anymore.
Right.
But over the years,
even though you moved away.
Yeah, but I knew back then, I always said to my mother, I'm not getting married. I'm going to have children, but I'm not getting married. Just remember, I'm not getting married. I didn't explain that I didn't know the word gay. Until I came here. But I knew that I was very different. But there wasn't a lot of role models back then to kind of say, oh, well.
So in spite of the lack of, I'm going to use this term in quote, services, you were very resourceful.
We grew up in the Anglican church. I'm Episcopalian, go figure. You know.
Well, we can all be multi-layered.
The Church of England. So we would go to Barbados every summer.
For a holiday?
Just a camp with the church. And so what happened is right next door. But it was a church camp. And Barbados has a street called Nelson Street, and it was a gay street where all the guys would get dressed up in, like, women's clothing. And when we got there, I was like, oh, wow, that's it.
Now,
ding,
see,
ding, 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 ding.
I never would have
yes,
never
Barbados
would have thought
is very,
that.
Has a, had for a very long time and opened more. It was a
so
little
very
bit,
liberal.
They weren't, I would say liberal, but there was a way that these guys were able to have their moment and get dressed
but
and
you,
they walk around. It
but
was glamorous.
Hold on, you used the word guys.
Mm-hmm.
So it was men.
Yeah.
Not women.
Not women. Women in the gay movement came in a little bit. They were there, but we always marginalized. Right?
Yes.
We were the power under everything because mm-hmm. with these young men in the Caribbean, women protected them. But at the same time, I didn't see myself though. But I understood that they were challenging something that I probably was myself.
Could you talk about this with your grandmother?
No. But later in life, when I did come out to my family and I asked them to say the word homosexual, when I came out to them, I realized, I was like, oh, ding, 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 ding. That's who I am. And, you know, so I
it
was
must have
able
been a great
to,
sense of relief.
Yes. And then when I brought a girlfriend home, she basically, she just pulled us in and just
very
kind
welcoming.
Of, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So she was open and she was, you know.
Let's advance.
Okay.
The 10 years. Mm-hmm. And your mother says, okay, Idris, I'm ready for you. You know, you're coming over.
I was so excited.
So you wanted to go.
Oh, I was ready to leave. I was ready to leave since I was ready to go someplace, any place.
Yeah.
You know,
I've exhausted St. Vincent basically where you were.
Yeah, I mean, St. Vincent is a beautiful island. It's an amazing island. I would raise myself there. If I had to do it all over again, I would grow up there and I'd come here later because I came here at 15.
I know.
When I came here, it was during the whole hip-hop. You know, it had just started.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Kangol hats, the Puma sneakers. Gun violence was just starting. Schools were beginning to be locked down and having kids were latchkey kids.
Mm.
I'm part of that generation.
Yes.
So I came here from an island where I was free to being now put into an apartment where I had to come home and lock myself in.
Boy, there's so many layers to your life.
Well, because women who are born to mothers who are nannies, that's what happens. You know, there's children like us. We
Had to fend for yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that. They love us, but they have to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're not angry?
No, not at all. I say thank you to her for giving me life and for giving me the space to grow. that moment that I was at home helped me to be more creative.
So I'm guessing in your life, the glass is half full.
It's always almost full.
Right.
I think that people don't understand it. Kids who are born to mothers who are nannies and you see them on the streets every day, mm-hmm. they're not getting the same attention that these kids are getting.
Right.
Give up so much.
Really?
So just their kids can have their lives.
And so there's no resentment and there's no anger.
No, because John Lennon.
Yeah,
building that he, oh, the Dakota. My mother worked for a family there. They also helped to put me to school in the Caribbean. How could I have some resentment? I won a scholarship
to high
school.
Did she live with the family?
She lived with the family. When she came here and she told them that she had to now be with her children, they were angry about that. And she had to leave.
Wow.
Because now she had to take care of her children. They want her.
Yeah.
So that happens a lot with families like that.
Their nannies are not supposed to have another life.
No, so the children are left. But people forget that children that are born to people who are nannies, the children get left behind. It was wonderful for me to be able to have this moment in the evenings when I came home from school. I had the freedom to, in my head, to just be creative and just to be
by myself. Did that work with your other siblings?
I'm very different than my other siblings.
Okay.
I'm the most outrageous person in my family. You know, I'm a little bit more eccentric. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit more open to the world.
And like we said, more resilient and can go with the flow
and
the difference.
My strength, I don't know where I got it from. I think it's my grandmother. My strength as a woman, as a black woman, as a gay woman. Because I cancel myself out, basically. I'm a woman. I'm a gay woman. I'm married. Things like that to a woman.
Yes.
I have a child who is mixed race.
Boy, all your boxes
so
are
all
checked,
my,
aren't
thank
they?
Thank you. So yeah. it's like plus, plus, minus, minus, plus. You know, so I'm kind of like, I tell myself all the time, I say I'm canceling myself out at all times, but I'm more powerful. For it. I like diversity, and when I decided to start my business, diversity was very important to mm-hmm. me because when I worked in the salon industry, uptown Madison Avenue in the 80s,
in New York City.
Yeah, thank you. And now think about it. I was a black girl on Madison Avenue, 62nd Street.
Yeah, somebody must have thought you just took a time off from cleaning someone's house.
Thank you. And besides that, I would have to, I worked at the basement at Le Coop.
Because
all
Le Coop?
Their foreign, Le Coop was this amazing salon that was on Madison 62nd Street. Now, all the white stylists were upstairs, and most of the minorities were downstairs. That can include Japanese, Spanish, whatever.
Who were clients?
No, we were assistants.
Oh, you mean the staff, excuse
the staff,
me.
Sorry, the staff. We were all downstairs.
Hidden
away. But I got it. As soon as I walked in, I understood it, because I was that girl. I understood what that
but
was.
But you probably thought to yourself, I'll milk from this what I can.
Because I'm that person. Mm-hmm. I see a situation, I don't say, oh, that's an obstacle. I walk right through. Because I'm in this country, I'm a voyeur. I wasn't raised with the same obstacles as mm-hmm. African Americans.
So you're
or
watching
black
and
Americans.
Absorbing.
Yes, because mm-hmm. I come from the outside. So whatever is here, I'm looking from here. And I'm not narrow. I'm looking wider than in that spectrum. I'm looking wide at mm-hmm. it. And so I'm looking for content, context. I'm looking for availability. I'm looking for
opportunity.
I'm looking for the fact that my footsteps of where I was born allowed me to be here. Now, what do I do with that footstep? What do I do with that chance?
From an early age, you probably assumed you would follow in your grandmother's footsteps. Not exactly, but this attractedness.
I loved her hands.
And you wanted to work with your hands.
I loved her hands, and I realized I was more like her. 50 years removed, we were, mm-hmm. but I was more like her than anyone else. I'm my grandmother.
So it was a no-brainer
for you to get into
this business.
Some kids are born into families and they become the matriarch. You become that person. And you try to run away from it, and I ran. Trust me, I ran away from my family for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I went as far away as I can to cleanse, mm-hmm. rebuild, and recreate. Yeah. A lot of people find that, they're born in a situation and they stay. And they get bogged down by where they're born, bogged down by the things that happen to them, or they blame their families for everything. I'm not that person. I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, I have a life. I have a chance to live that life. How am I going to live that life? And then for me, it was meditate, find people that show love, and some sisterhood, some brotherhood, and giving back.
Mm-hmm.
So humanity is very important to me. And making sure that I cleanse and I take care of Idris. Because without taking care of you first, you would never grow.
Exactly.
And you sit there blaming your family, but you're not going anywhere.
Let's move from that inner feeling to that trajectory of you come here, you're 15, you're a high school student, you get into this after-school program, which did what for you?
It helped me to be creative. I tried everything. I did tennis. Because back then, you had a chance to be in after-school programs. They don't have that stuff anymore. After-school programs were available to everyone. You can do anything you wanted. It was available.
The world was your oyster,
yeah,
in a sense.
So I did an after-school program in here. I did tennis. I did some math clubs. Plus, I also work because I like buying my own things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like anyone buying my stuff. So the thing for me was finding what will make me the best person that I can be in this life. So I went from high school, I went to college. I went to Baruch College.
Which is in New York City.
I studied computers and marketing.
Okay.
So I went there and I joined the Caribbean Club and I started doing everyone's hair. I always did hair.
Mm-hmm.
All the way to high school, I always had a job doing hair of some kind. I always did it. So I went to college and I graduated and I realized, oh, I'm not happy, you know? And so I decided to get back into hair. After work, I would go to try to get my license. And while I was there, someone liked me and he said, you need to work in Madison Avenue. And I said, okay. And he told me the salon I should work at. And I said, okay, let me go check them all out. But I checked out black salons first and realized I didn't fit in because I wanted my world to be a little bit wider and not so close. And I knew that I was looking forward and past, you know, the 90s. I was past the, you know, 2000. I wanted to look forward in the future because I wanted to do everything. And in order to do that, in black salons, you were kind of stuck with black hair.
Exactly. And you were...
I didn't want to do
that.
Yeah,
you were typecast in a sense.
Yeah, that was it. And the things that you were doing, I didn't want to do it. I wanted to be a hair cutter. I wanted to be one of the boys. I wanted to cut hair.
When we say all types of hair, do we also mean that you wanted to cut men and women's hair?
Everyone.
It didn't matter.
It didn't matter. I wanted to be a top of my craft, and I wanted to do it. So when I walked into Le Coop and I saw all these people doing that, and it was not different type of hair, but it was just like they were cutting,
mm-hmm,
and they were shaping.
And your grandmother didn't necessarily did that.
No, I was sitting in the front, and I was like, wow, that's what I want to do. And as soon as I walked in, someone came over and said, we're going to hire you. Because I was, you know, I was out there. I was different.
Yes, so they were going to take a chance on you.
Yeah, and so Louis Sakari mentored me.
Yes, there's a big name.
Yes, Louis Sakari. Louis Sakari took me under his wing. So here I was in a salon where I had to fight a lot of stereotypes, but at the same time, he would come downstairs and he was like, he liked me, and whenever you feel like you're having a moment, just come upstairs and just come and hang with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. I would go upstairs, and also he would wear, it was very fabulous back then, he would wear a white shirt to hair color.
Yeah, really?
Uh-huh. You know, and then here I am, a kid, I'm working for $45, you know, a week, basically. He became someone that was very important to me. He taught me how to be professional, how to work with clients, how to stand in the salon, how to just be strong in an industry that was, and also it was a male-dominated industry.
No kidding.
Okay, so here this woman had to figure out how to make women sexy. Also trying to hold back who I was as a lesbian because people didn't want to come to someone who's a lesbian.
I would think not.
Mm-hmm. And so I can talk about my life.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's trying to introduce me to a guy. And in my head, I'm going screaming, going like, I don't want to be introduced to a guy, you know, kind of thing. So that kind of started the process for me. He taking me under his wing was very important.
So that probably gave you a stronger sense of self because you were validated.
You're validated and encouraged, you know, because also the other person who took care of me and he passed away from AIDS was this wonderful young man who was from Montreal because the owner of the salon was from Montreal. And he took me under his wing and made me his assistant. He did all the socialites. Trump's wife, Ivana Trump, came there at 8:30. They all came in early
Trump's
in the morning.
First wife.
His first wife. Yes, his first wife. Sorry. Ivana came in at 8:30 every morning to get that. She was wearing that updo to get her hair done. So, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a crossing with her also. It says that she came in one day and she loved the way I shampooed her hair. And she basically gave me quarters.
As a tip?
Yes. And I looked at her and I
quarters.
Said, yeah. And I looked at her and I said, back then you need to make a phone call. And I said, back then I passed my over to her and I said, thank you so much. But next time you don't give anyone quarters because it's disrespectful.
Yeah.
I said, I'd rather you just say thank you to me. And at first I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be fired. But then I realized that that's where the strength started growing because my voice was beginning to hurt. Because I was unusual for being on Madison at the time as a black woman because
gotcha.
I was very vocal. I wasn't rude. Because I was raised with a lot of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the grace, you have to have grace. So I used the grace that I was raised with and I challenged everything.
You're getting your street cred, you're mm-hmm. apprenticing. And then does the trips abroad come, working freelance in Paris and Milan?
Well, what happened, so I have to give you one more story though, in the sense that at Le Coop, what happened was that normally 2 weeks before you go on the floor, they would put your name in the book. And I also worked at, because I came from college, well-spoken, I was able to work the front desk. So I had prepared
booking
myself.
Booking appointments.
Exactly. And the manager loved me very much, so she took very good care of me. And so I was about to go on the floor. What happens? My name is not in the book. So then I knew they weren't going to put me on the floor.
Uh-huh.
So I basically, I went upstairs. I went to her and I said, I'm preparing my models. Are you going to put me on the floor? She said, I have to tell you, I want to talk to you about that. And I said, you're not going to put me on the floor.
And she acknowledged that she was.
She goes, I've been fighting with him for the last couple of weeks. They weren't going to put you on the floor. And I said, okay.
And who's the him?
Charles Booth. Mm-hmm. So I left the salon. I walked over to his office and I walked in and said, we have a nonverbal agreement. If I do assist and be a great assistant, that I go on the floor. My name is on the book. What are you doing? What are you saying to me? I said, I've worked really hard. I'm the best assistant there is here.
And I'm ready.
Yes. And so he goes, well, we can give you a reference. And I looked at him, I said, reference doesn't work in this business. I said, I now have to start all over again because I don't have a clientele. So I left and I said, fine. And I walked out to his office and I walked back to the salon to grab my things. And he came over and he called me back in his office and I said, there's nothing to talk about. I said, but just remember, in a couple of years from now, you're going to want me. And I walked out.
Wow.
And Arian, this woman, her name was Arian, and she was working at Pepino Bocari at the time. And she says, come and work with me. Louis also told me to come and work with him. But I didn't want to have that
experience again.
I didn't want to have that Le Coupe people around me. I didn't want to pave my own,
gotcha.
Road.
Make your own way.
So I decided to go to Pepino Bocari instead, where they were doing something different. And I walked in and Edward Tracomi said to me, you'd be my assistant. And when I walked in, he could walk right over. He said, you're going to be my assistant, just like that. Mm-hmm. I walked in the salon. I've never really had to fight for, well, I'd worked that hard to get a job.
Well, what does it mean to be an assistant? Does that mean that you get your own clientele?
No, it means that you're working with assisting someone so that you can get your chair at some point.
At some point, and
so,
you're watching.
So
and
I
you're
worked
going.
2 years before at Pepino Le Coupe, and now mm-hmm. I'm working. Mm-hmm. I had to do another. So I walked in and said, oh, you, and so after I started working, he said, you're very good. So we should put you on the floor. I said, no. I said, I'm not going to go on the floor because there were other assistants ahead of me. Mm-hmm. I knew that if I went on the floor before them, that I would be hated.
Sure, sure.
And you don't want to do that to other people.
Of course
and that's not.
Not
my energy. So I waited 2 more years. I did not go. I had my own chair until 4 years after I started.
Wow.
I bid my time. I did it because I knew that I needed to learn something new that was happening this salon.
So how did white women feel about having an African-American woman cut their hair?
It's interesting because most people, they would look at me from afar and they knew that I can do their hair, but they wouldn't sit in my chair.
Right.
And sometimes, and if a new client came in that did not know me, they were like, you're going to do my hair? Some people would blatantly say to me, are you kidding? No, this is serious.
No, I'm saying that they were looking at them saying, are you kidding?
And I said, do you think that being a black woman in a salon in Madison Avenue, that they're going to put me on this chair if I didn't know what I was doing?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know how hard I had to work for this chair? So you had to sit down or there's lots of people to go to. And then they're like, oh. I said, they just sit. And they've become some of my best clients.
And so you build this reputation,
yes.
And then you can kind of go out on your own, in a sense. And is that what happened
in
terms
Edward
of Europe?
Yeah, so Edward introduced me to a few models, and I started doing Veronica Webb. I did all the stuff for Revlon with her.
Excellent.
So I became her personal stylist, and I started becoming different people's personal stylists and building a name for myself.
So let's move to 2003,
right.
When you, I'm going to say it this way, when you had the nerve to open up your own salon.
And that's it. I had the nerve to because I was told that how dare I.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I went to my boss and I said, I can't work for you anymore. In a year from now, I'd like to have my own space. Will you please open a salon downtown for me? Give me a percentage and I don't really have to have a salon. I really, really don't want to have a salon. But if I push come to shove, I want my own business. In my head as a child, I've always wanted to work on my own. I need my independence. I don't want to be held out by anyone. And so I went to him and I said, in a year from now, I'm going to have, no one's listening because they couldn't pay me anymore.
Right.
I was training everyone. I was a creative director. I was the education director. I was carrying all the
titles and this weight.
And I trained everyone. So I've trained. There's a lot of Idrises out there that I've given their hands. I've given a lot of people their hand. And they know that if someone's trained by me, if now people steal my assistants when I'm done because they know that if they're trained by me, they're trained well.
Yes.
I'm tough. You know, I'm strong and I'm tough, but I'm fair. You know, I'm not a diva, but I'm definitely strong. I have very strong conviction about who I am. And so I went up to them and I said, okay, I'm going to open my own business. And he said, I was looking around and the real estate person decided to go and tell them that I was looking at the space. And that's how they knew I was looking at spaces. I didn't have a space to go. I just looking. And they got so mad. So I walked in and I just walked out. I didn't have a space. I didn't have a storefront. But I had chairs in Florida in a storage. But I didn't have anything. When I walked out, I left my clientele behind. I left my salon behind. I said, if you're going to speak to me like that and treat me like this after I've given you so much, you don't deserve my respect, or I don't have, my dignity mm-hmm. is a big part for me, and you don't deserve me being here.
So you managed to find a space.
I managed to work at the salon quietly for a year while I look for a space. Mm-hmm. And then the internet had just started for me. So Idris is a name that is an unusual
name. Yes.
And so I was in Yellow Pages and people just found me. I went out after my clientele. Everyone found me.
And so what is the significance of March 3rd?
It's Japanese Girls Day.
Which means?
And I love the Japanese culture. And I've trained a lot of Japanese assistants. I love the aesthetic. I love the way that the girls, the work. You can give them anything and they can duplicate it. It's that easy. I don't have to ever tell them more than once.
So March 3rd, 2003, you open up Idris Salon.
Yes.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history.
And you're doing just a bang-up, fabulous business in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood.
My salon is about a meeting place for women. That's what it's about. A meeting for people in general.
Yes, and men and
men.
Women.
It's a meeting place for people because when people come in, they love to sit down. They love to talk to everybody. And my staff has that same energy.
Mm-hmm. We've basically run out of time, but I can't not acknowledge the fact that you shave your head.
I've worked with my hair like this in my business.
Why?
Because, you know, I think a lot of stylists in this industry, especially women, a lot of times back in the day, they used to be looking at themselves a lot. And when you're doing a woman's hair, you have to pay attention to
her.
And so a lot of times women are like this and they're telling about themselves. And I'm like, you know what? Not about me. They get distracted.
That is fascinating.
Because a lot of times women would say, oh, women can't cut my hair. Well, men would say, oh, dude, women can't cut hair. And I decided to take me out of it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So I've always worked with my being bald, and I grew my hair for 5 years because I wanted to learn how natural hair was,
uh-huh.
because I needed to be able to tell my clients. And then I realized, okay, why am I having this hair? I'm much more attractive. I feel much more attractive. I feel
and
much
freer,
more powerful
I bet.
And free mm-hmm. as this.
And so as you look back on your life and your career, and as we sit here today, you're in a really good place, aren't you?
I'm loving who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I love this woman. I like her. I like this woman. I'm not afraid of her. I love her. I don't talk badly about her because she's worked hard to get here.
And you embrace her.
Yeah,
And you can sit back and see the fruits of your labor.
Yes.
You have
and
a very successful
no
business.
No matter what happens, there's always me. I'm always going to be me,
mm-hmm.
no matter what.
I bet that there have been so many men and women who have learned more than the skill and the craft of hairstyling from you. They've learned a lot about life.
Think about this. I'm a lesbian who talks to heterosexual women about their lives and what to do with it.
Every day.
And I've giving them advice on almost everything in their life and also supporting.
So you're in a good place for Idris Nichols,
yes,
right?
Yes, I'm in a good place.
Is there
like
anything
her.
You want to do that you haven't done?
My product line.
Are you coming out with a product line?
I'm working on it. I'm working on, right now I'm just working on, I advise a lot of different people on products and hair for different events. But I really want to have just a small, not mm-hmm. a lot, just mm-hmm. a tiny, because you know there's lots of products out there.
There sure are. Idris, thank you so much for sharing your life. It's really very inspirational.
Thank you.
And empowering.
Yeah.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.